Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Normally, I'd play across the nation at this point, but unfortunately, we're on a bit of a time crunch. What are you going to see tonight, Tony?
Jeff Mercy with Jamie Foxx.
Ah, and Michael C. Jordan?
Yeah.
I think it's C. Jordan. Well, they have to differentiate between the basketball player, Ovs.
Right.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I've been spending too much time playing Simpsons Tapped Out recently. Anywho, good evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening, whatever. And welcome to the reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. The other voice you just heard is that of the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up?
Unfortunately, the co-hostess with the mostesses, Miss Liz Puglisi, is experiencing some power issues in New York and has a mother that requires power in order to live. Therefore, she's not home and unable to do the show tonight. So it's just the two of us. We kick it old school style here on the reaction tonight, Tony.
Yeah, I didn't know Liz's mom was powered by electricity. It's pretty crazy.
Well, it's more she's powered by oxygen, and the oxygen tank has to be plugged in.
Speaking of oxygen tanks, did you see the girl in the crowd that nearly got knocked out by Aleister Black?
I did not, but sounds like something I'm going to have to look for on a replay. Maybe you can. Do you got like a GIF or something that you have for this instance?
No. It was just an interesting sight to see. Poor lady in the front row with her oxygen tank nearby and, you know, her nostrils filled with the air supply and get knocked out by Aleister Black.
I will say this much. Liv in the all-leather outfit was quite invigorating tonight.
Invigorating.
Enzo Amore hit that. Just let that sink in for a second, Tony.
Oh, I mean, you know, with the right mouth, you can do whatever you want.
Anywho, just going to go ahead and move on past that. What do you say we get to SmackDown real quick here?
Okay.
All right, so the episode of SmackDown was in, I don't even remember, I think Mississippi, but I'm not sure. Might have been Kentucky. No, they were in Kentucky tonight for Raw, so I think they were in Mississippi for SmackDown. But regardless, the two major talking points that I had for this episode of SmackDown, the first of which was The Miz and Kofi run it back from last week. And it kind of brings the tie-in to one of the returns that we discussed last week here on the show, Tony, as Miz and Kofi have their match in the ring with Big E outside supporting Kofi and John Morrison outside of the ring supporting The Miz. So they're following up on what we saw with Morrison and Miz's locker room 2 weeks ago.
Right.
In this instance here, we see Morrison do a dive that admittedly mostly misses Big E, but more stuns him because he body blocked him parkour style, the Prince of Parkour and all that noise. But regardless, the body block that Morrison delivers to Big E distracts Kofi long enough for Miz to catch Kofi with the skull crushing finale to pick up the victory. The talking point here is obviously this seems to be the setup for the Royal Rumble tag team title match for SmackDown, as Big E and Kofi will probably defend against the dirt sheet Miz and Morrison. Do you like the idea behind putting Morrison back in the tag team division upon his return to the WWE, or do you think that he should have had an opportunity to go solo upon coming back to the WWE after everything that he's done elsewhere while he was gone? similar to, say, a Drew McIntyre.
Well, it's just, it's a weird place to re-debut someone and expect them to be in any type of title picture because of the spaced out, you know, process of the pay-per-views. And also, the Royal Rumble was a one-match-only pay-per-view anyway. So I'm not opposed to him having a little bit of tag team fun, assuming that that's what's going to happen, because it doesn't necessarily mean he's disqualified from being a singles competitor, but you also don't want to blow your wad so soon to on a pay-per-view that nobody's going to be watching it for anything but the Rumble.
Very well. Do you think that they will put the tag team titles on Miz and Morrison at the Rumble?
No.
See, I disagree with you. I think they will. I think that Miz and Morrison create a lot of new opportunities in the tag team division that, quite frankly, over on SmackDown is a little bit stagnant at the moment.
You think it's stagnant on SmackDown?
I mean, okay, fair. All right, so the other thing to discuss was the main event, which was the in-ring return of the Usos, because apparently the Blue Brand gets all the new people coming back. And the Usos ended up taking on King Corbin and Dolph Ziggler in a tag team match, where King Corbin and Ziggler pick up the win by disqualification, thanks to Roman Reigns spearing Corbin on the outside. Interestingly enough, much like Morrison, Sheamus, and the Usos last week, we get another return on Friday night on SmackDown as Robert Roode comes back and helps Corbin and Ziggler lay out Roman Reigns, with Ziggler putting Reigns through the announce table with an elbow drop after Roode spinebuster Reigns onto the announce table. Do you think they still see anything in Robert Roode even after the wellness policy violation, or is this just kind of a give him something to do and let him just be there to be fodder for Roman going towards the Rumble?
I think it lies somewhere in the middle. I mean, I think that they still see him as valuable. Otherwise, he'd be jobbing to somebody else the minute he came back. I don't know. Of all those men in there, I'm not interested in any of them except for maybe Reigns, and that's just a little bit.
I mean, I like the Usos. I think the Usos were able to refresh themselves after becoming very stagnant once they started the Uso Penitentiary thing. The problem is spent.
I meant specifically.
Oh, you
Corbin,
mean as far
Brood.
I got you. That makes sense. All right, what about the Usos? Where do you think they fall in all of this here? Do you think it's they're just there to support Roman throughout this six-person tag situation, and then they go back towards the tag team division?
Yeah, just for a little bit. I think that it's inevitable for them to return, or at least I hope. I never got tired of the Usos. I mean, except when they were trying to be funny against Revival. They brought the heat every single match, so it was fun watching. I miss them.
All right, quick hits from SmackDown. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me start up. Miz TV opened the show. It led into the Miz and Kofi match that we discussed earlier. Miz TV basically established that Morrison was going to be a heel in his return to the company. Miz, they're kind of teetering with, but he's definitely leaning more heel as well. I think Miz works better as a heel, although he was a surprisingly effective babyface over the course of the last 2 years. We see another step in the story between Mandy Rose and Otis, as in order to apologize to Otis for Dolph Ziggler smashing the fruitcake, Mandy Rose apparently baked a cake for Otis. Mandy then had a singles match with Alexa Bliss, and Otis's music hits, and he comes out munching on the cake, which distracts Alexa Bliss long enough for Mandy Rose to roll her up and pick up a victory here. I know how you feel about the distraction finishes with the music happening, so I'm not even going to waste my time with that. But, B, what do you make of the whole Otis-Mandy Rose thing here? Do you think they're actually going to have this playoff where Mandy and Otis end up involved? Or do you think that they're building towards Rose possibly having a new interest that takes Otis out down the line that isn't Dolph Ziggler?
I don't know. Last week I thought it'd be a nice way to give people some characterization that worked. This week I'm not so sure. I'm not saying Otis is some intelligent being, but they really made him out to, like, in what world does it make sense for him to come out eating the cake? Like, why wouldn't he just stay in the back and eat it? You know, like, what was the point of that? And why would your music hit? So, yeah, I don't know. Now I'm not so sure about them.
Obviously, he came out eating the cake to show Mandy that he appreciated the cake and the apology that came with it.
Don't try to defend this, Harry.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Otis and Tucker are ever going to be anything in the tag team division, but it's like you said last week here on the show, Tony, at least we're giving these people something to do that might make the casual fan care about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't fault them for that. I don't like the fact that it played into the finish for the match. I don't like the fact that they've seemingly forgotten about what they were going to do with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I don't like the fact that Alexa Bliss, of all people, is playing second fiddle to this. But at the same time, I don't mind. Stop listening, Alexa. Jesus. You get a Kindle Fire tablet, and Alexa listens to everything you say.
You'll miss her if she leaves.
I know I missed the other Alexa when she left. Anywho, Lacey versus Sasha Banks is supposed to happen, but apparently Sasha's off putting the final touches on her rap album. Obviously, Tony's going to listen to the rap album. How many stars do you anticipate giving it?
Oh, probably like 2.
Okay, at least that's an honest answer. If AJ Lee were to release a rap album, how many stars would it get?
7.
8 if she's victorious.
Classic.
I'm trying to stall for time right now so I can find the sound effect, but it's escaped me, so I'm not even going to waste my time continuing to look for it. I'm a little disappointed that it's disappeared. Instead, Lacey Evans and Bayley end up getting into a brawl backstage. Bayley gets the better of the brawl at the start, but like any true villain, pauses to taunt, and that's when Lacey makes the comeback. However, they are separated before Lacey can lay Bayley out with the women's right. I don't mind babyface Lacey. I think she's showing a lot more intensity, a lot more passion than she did as a heel. I think she feels much more natural as a babyface than she did as a heel. I think having somebody like Bayley to work with is helping her, especially with Bayley finally getting her footing on the main roster now. What are your thoughts on the Lacey Bayley program here? And do you think we end up seeing a title change at Royal Rumble for it?
Well, I hope not. You know, I'm not a big fan of Lacey's. I do think that she's being better utilized as a face, not because she's a good person, but because I feel like she believes more in what she's saying right now than she did when she was a heel. It wasn't all that believable. Now it is. I mean, how could you deny someone defending their daughter and truly wanting to be a good example, you know? I do enjoy the fact that she didn't change her character. She just changed the point of view of her stances. But other than that, I still find it relatively bland. So this doesn't do one thing for me or another, but I would not want her to take the title quite yet.
Aw, Puddin.
I miss her.
I know, Tony. I know. We've been doing this long enough. Trust me, I know. Shinsuke Nakamura and Braun Strowman non-title action. We see Strowman pick up a victory after an attempt by Sami Zayn to give Nakamura the IC title backfires when Strowman ducks and then hits the power slam anyway. I'm fully expecting this match to be on the pre-show. I'm fully expecting Nakamura to win this match here, but are you okay with them using Strowman in a situation like this, having him settle around that mid-card IC title level era? Or do you think they just need to cut bait with Strowman already and just let him go since they've pretty much killed any major momentum he may have had?
I think nearly every person is saveable, salvageable at least. So no, I don't think any one person should get like outright fired or let go, especially Braun. And if we're going to use him, I mean, this is fine. He's a nice little foil to Sammy. I'm not, like, you know, again, this is a weird time. We're in January. We're at a time where people aren't really focused on blood feuds. They're focused on specific matches, i.e. the Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, stuff like that. So, and then eventually we get to that WrestleMania season. So, I don't know. Now's the time where you either shine or you flounder.
Daniel Bryan receives Ramblin' Rabbit's corpse as a present from Bray Wyatt. That rabbit gets killed more often than The Undertaker does.
Yeah, he's for sure is the Kenny of Firefly Funhouse.
You killed Rabbit, you bastards! Speaking of which, I just got the fractured butthole for Xbox One.
Oh,
have you played any of the South Park video games?
No, I don't. I am a mature
you
adult.
Don't
I am playing Arkham.
So, Batman.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely stunned at this news, Tony.
I understand. Have a seat.
All right, so let's move over to Monday Night Raw now, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so the first thing to talk about is the first thing that happened on the show. It appeared that we were getting ready to do the return match from WrestleMania last year between Randy Orton and AJ Styles when Drew McIntyre shows up and decides to add another component to this match. And dare I say, Drew McIntyre added a much more interesting component to this match as well. First of all, what are your thoughts on the quasi-face tease that they're doing with McIntyre? Do you think he's going to work as a babyface?
I mean, I think he's working as a babyface. He's not really doing anything different other than in encouraging the crowd to, like, reply and, you know, be a part of the show. so I think Drew McIntyre will work, period. You just got to put enough energy behind him, and I think they did that tonight.
Which brings us to the match itself, a triple threat contest as McIntyre takes on Orton and Styles here. I hate the stealing the finish spot that pretty much every triple threat seems to end on, but at least it was well executed here as Orton hits the RKO on Styles. Right as Orton's recovering from hitting the RKO, he gets caught with a claymore by McIntyre, and McIntyre takes the pin on Styles in order to win the match. I was having a conversation with a group of people here, and then I'll get your thoughts on the match, but I do want your thoughts on my idea here as well. Drew McIntyre doesn't necessarily need to win the Royal Rumble, but I do think McIntyre should be the one to eliminate Brock Lesnar, and then I'll get your thoughts on the match and that comment right there.
Well, I think Maven should make a return and eliminate Brock. I think it would be great.
I'm going to go ahead and fucking ignore that. and I actually liked Maven.
The match was fun. You know, my biggest complaint about triple threats is how often it's really just a one-on-one with a third person laying on the outside until they're ready. This one was not like that at all, with the exception of minor moments that were perfectly plausible. I like the banter. I like that Randy Orton has officially entered that phase in his career where he doesn't need to be a face or a heel. He just kind of does what he wants. He's got the trust in the back to say whatever he wants and to act more like himself than usual. It usually happens around year 8 for most people. I liked his back and forth with AJ. You could see there's a lot more energy between the two than there was in their previous encounter. And then adding Drew to the foil, whether he's comparing finishers and, you know, making it somewhat of a penis joke or just being a little bit more interacting with the crowd, it brings another level of joy to his character. So the match kind of translated well, too. The fact that they just went out there and said, let's just have a match. I mean, one could question who's the authority figure, who made the match, who okayed it, blah, blah, blah. But you didn't question it at that moment. You just watched it, enjoyed it, and that was that. I had a good time with it. I thought they had a lot of fun, and I don't know. It was great. Truly, there's the only thing that diminishes good matches on Raw is commentary. They don't do anything wrong. They're just so bad at it. they point out the most obvious things that they're trying to get over, and so they like say the same things over and over. And it's just tonight was another rough night for commentary.
I don't have anything against Vic Joseph per se. I just don't think that he's the best option for that table there. I feel like Tom Phillips is a much better energy when it comes to the commentary table. That being said, I do think that the sooner we get Jerry Lawler off commentary, probably the better at this point in his career.
Man, he is rough to listen to.
I mean, not as bad as JR calling AEW AWE last week on Dynamite, because, God, that was hard to listen to. But it's to the point now where you mentioned the OK Boomer thing about Lawler, and it's just he shows more and more of it on a week-by-week basis.
Poor guy.
I mean, if I'm lying, I'm frying, and I ain't dead yet.
Yeah, way to talk shit about Jerry Lawler by doing exactly what Jerry Lawler does, Harry. Jesus.
Don't make me play that AJ sound effect again. I will, you son of a bitch. All right, which one would you rather talk in depth about? The Lashley Rusev match or the main event?
What? Don't you dare. The main event. Why would I want to talk about Lashley Rusev at length?
You actually thought Lashley
at all.
Okay, fine. You know what? Just for that and the fact that you're comparing me to Lawler, we are going to talk about Lashley and Rusev at length. Suck it.
You
anyway.
Are.
I actually thought that the match was pretty good for what it was. I get the idea behind the finish with Liv coming down. And again, Liv looks scrumptious tonight. So that gets a bonus point for this match here anyway. To confront Lana and set up the obvious mixed tag team match here. But I thought after a somewhat subpar tables match at TLC, they actually had a pretty decent match tonight. I'm not going to sit here and say they blew the doors off of Raw or anything, because they didn't. But at least Rusev didn't look like an outright bitch for most of this match like he did at TLC.
No, the match was great. Lashley showed a lot of energy. Well, he did not slow down. Rusev did his part. It was a great match. I enjoyed the hell out of the match. But it doesn't erase the stink that's around it.
Do you think if they were just left to their own devices to have one of those situations similar to like a Orton and McIntyre a couple of weeks back of, I'm tougher, no, I'm tougher, well, let's fight and find out. Do you think that we'd be more forgiving of their contest if it wasn't surrounded by the stupid storyline around it?
Well, yeah, obviously, because the storyline is one that that doesn't make sense for a man to fight against another man for. Rusev has no dog in this fight. He doesn't want to be with Lana. He's happy that she's gone. He has no qualms with Bobby. If he wants to marry her, then by any means, go ahead. So he gains nothing in having a match against them at all. Like, nothing. So there's no reason for him to. It's illogical. And that, as per usual, is one of the biggest things that make me just uninterested in it. There's no reason to fight. Even for Lashley, I mean, they even showed a little bit of that tonight. Like, I just beat him. Why do I have to face him again? That's logic. That has been gone from this storyline the entire time.
At least Liv has a reason to want to fight Lana.
Does she, though?
It's better than I stole your wife. Fuck you.
I don't know, man. I'm not buying it. No, but no, right. That takes nothing against the actual match. I thought it was solid. One of Lashley's better performances.
All right, so in order to discuss the main event, we have to talk about something that preceded it, and I feel like you'll be perfectly willing to talk about the thing that preceded it. Aleister Black, Buddy Murphy 3. Other than the referee fucking up and referee, you did fuck up. That match was fucking fantastic.
Well, yeah, it's really, really rare to have three matches almost in a row and them not be tiresome or repetitive. And these guys keep doing it. They're innovative. They do new things. They show this tenacity that you only really see in like an NXT takeover type environment. It's one of those things where it's rare to see neither performer focus on the crowd or audience at all. I know that's very, very little to notice, but if you notice it, you realize that these two are performing for each other. You know, of course they love the adulation of the crowd and they're listening and they hear every "This is awesome" chant and every, you know, quasi "Fight Forever" chant. But realistically, they're performing. They're like at the top of their game and they're doing what they have to do to make sure that this is the best thing that anybody's ever seen ever for the third time. And they do it. They do it really, really well. I don't know, man. They're great storytellers too. Because obviously there's a story to be told tonight.
What are your thoughts on the screw up on the finish?
I mean, I feel like this is the same ref that does that like multiple times. they might want to retrain him. but also, when you're in the heat of a moment and when you're in a match like that and it's high energy, you know, shit happens.
Do you think it was done to possibly save some face for Murphy after Aleister was able to get a foot on the rope off of the Murphy's Law?
I think it was a mistake, but I don't think it was that big of a mistake. And also, it got the chance to see that Murphy could take a hit and maybe almost kick out. You know, it's just that's all. It gave it a little bit of a extra added fold to it, where maybe the ref, you know, like a referee, you know, like in football, when you notice that they're not throwing as many flags, even when they should, you know, the whole let them fight mentality, where like the ref possibly thinks he's got a little more in him. Let's see what more he could take. It's not fair, but for some sporting events, that's exactly what you want. You know, the last quarter of a basketball game, the last 10 minutes of a football game, where the refs are just kind of like, come on, let's see what you guys have.
I will say that I do appreciate the fact that the way that they did the finish, though, with Aleister Black showing no mercy towards Murphy and just pulling Murphy back up to his knees in order to put the final bullet in Old Yeller, as it were.
Yeah, this wasn't a respect thing. He's like, I'm here to kick your ass, and that's exactly what I did. Do you want me to do it again?
Okay. Swack. You could see, like, the little comic book sound effect come up off of that black mask, too, because it landed. Blush. So that leaves Buddy Murphy at ringside pouting for basically the rest of the night. Charlie Caruso. Tries to get a word, but Murphy isn't having it. Your main event is a fist fight, which is basically no disqualification, KO rules. And no, not Kevin Owens rules. I mean, KO as a knockout. Okay, that was a Jerry Lawler joke.
Now, fuck that. KO rules. The first man to officially run up the ramp and flip was not Rey Mysterio, wasn't Sin Cara, any version of him, wasn't Ricochet, wasn't Kalisto, it was Kevin Owens.
Some bitch can fly for a 300-pounder.
He ran up that
okay,
chair
he's
like
probably,
he was on a skateboard.
Okay, he's probably closer to like 270 now, but still, homeboy can fly. Anywho.
He said, Darby Allin, hold my board.
See, now I kind of want to see Darby Allin try to skateboard the Raw set. I feel like that would be fucking hysterical. Anywho, back to the match in question here. What did you make of the match itself? The finish is what we'll talk about here in a little bit, but outside of the finish, what did you make of the match? Are you surprised it was as short as it was?
No. It was 7:53 when the bitch started, so. Look, the only thing that bothered me about the match was that it was called a fist fight. That's literally the only issue I had. Everything else was awesome. That was a great brawl. There was no pauses. It was a mess. Everybody was everywhere. It wasn't like that's what it should be. It shouldn't be choreographed to where you have some nice camera angles and you could see everything. It was messy. Joe and Owens went out there to beat some ass. Big Show went out there to beat some ass. They got, you know, outsmarted by Seth basically being a maniacal cult leader and bringing somebody in his most vulnerable state into the fold. It was nice. It was some good storytelling because it's easy and people believe it.
Okay, seeing the start of the Raw report that I did, how surprised were you that Big Show didn't turn?
I didn't think he was going to. I know that I made a joke that he would, but it wasn't. It wouldn't have mattered at this particular moment in time.
If it makes you feel any better, you weren't the only one who had the similar line of that thought process. As soon as the match was announced at the start of Raw, once they were going over the card again, Warren sends me a text message that says, "So what are the odds Big Show turns tonight?" Shout out to Warren Freeman. I know he listens. Anyway, let's talk about the finish here with Buddy Murphy joining up with Seth's crew here. It is now the AOP, Seth Rollins, and Buddy Murphy as the Monday Night Messiah picks up yet another piece in his arsenal here. I got to tell you, if it's going to end up setting up like a main roster version of War Games with Big Show, KO, Joe, and Alistair against Seth, the AOP, and Murphy, I'm down.
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I don't think that they've even thought that process through. I wouldn't be opposed, but this is all just to make, Seth a little bit stronger. You know, there's something missing from this entire situation, and that's the belt. But if they can make Seth Rollins this, maniacal cult-like leader, different enough from the Shield to be somewhat, like he's a CrossFit Jesus, man. He's building his disciples. You know, he's few people away from the Last Supper. It's not a hard story to tell. You just need the right members. And I think so far he's doing pretty well.
He's like 8 people away from the Last Supper. And any and all anger about the sacrilegiousness of this conversation can be sent to tony.acero@gmail.com.
It's acero.anthony@yahoo.com, and I don't give a fuck.
See, I was trying to give him a fake email.
No, that's fine. I don't think this is the route that they're going per se, but when you look at any like cult-like faction, there is this this god complex that the leader has, whether it's Jim Jones or the Waco thing. There's people out there that are just they're looking for something to believe in. They're looking for someone to follow. And if they do this right, they won't. But if they do this right, they can make Seth Rollins that person. Just, as long as he doesn't have some mass suicide on Raw, we're good.
Okay, can I ask you a quick question here without trying to be that guy constantly looking for an angle for a return here?
Okay, sure, go.
I got a very strong, straight-edge society cult-like CM Punk cult-like vibe from the way he recruited Murphy tonight. Do you think that was intentional?
No. I don't think it has anything to do with CM Punk. I think it has something to do with the same writers or similar writers in the room. And like I said, it's
okay.
not a hard story to tell.
That's a fair assessment. I just figured I'd bring it up because it came off very, very punkish when Punk recruited Festus, Luke Gallows, to be in the Straight Edge Society.
Now, if Seth Rollins shows up next week bald, then we might have a conversation.
CrossFit Jesus. He can't cut his hair, then he won't be Jesus. HEBTheEagle@yahoo.com, bitches. Bring it. You ready for quick hits, Tony?
Yep.
Ricochet and Mojo Rawley. Ricochet picks up the win with the return of the 630 at 3 minutes and 25 seconds. This is not it for Mojo Rawley, however, as he ends up winning the 24/7 title later on in the evening. Good for Mojo. No one cares, but good for Mojo.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a soft spot for Mojo. I think he has the energy to be something. I think he knows how to talk. They don't think so. I did notice something that he said when he won. Is that he's not running. He's taking on everybody. I think that would be an interesting take on that title. We'll see how far it goes or if it goes anywhere with it.
And then next week he runs from Eric Young and you just shit all over it. Fair?
Oh, I'll be pissed.
Very well. Charlotte Flair takes down Sarah Logan in 2 minutes and 5 seconds. Back to main event with you, Sarah.
Well, I told you last week it didn't matter then. It's not going to matter next week. And they just they took a little longer to make that point. That's all.
I don't know. 2 minutes and 5 seconds ain't that long. I felt bad for Sarah Logan.
I think she felt bad for Sarah Logan.
Like, I don't think Sarah's anything super special. Let me get that out of the way right now. I've worked shows with Sarah before. I don't think she's like this amazing worker. She's going to be the super duper star or anything. But if you're going to attempt to build somebody up like this, why the fuck would you have them lose in 2 minutes the way that she did? Because
well,
it's the Royal Rumble coming up. Because it's the Royal Rumble coming up and Charlotte has to look strong. She's the female Roman.
No, I told you last week, this wasn't for Sarah. This has nothing to do with her.
All right, so he either really pisses people off or people find him very entertaining. Where did you fall on the R-Truth scale tonight?
I felt that R-Truth did amazing. I think that he had Brock laughing. I don't think that that was part of the
Oh, that was 100% real Brock busting out laughing the way he was.
Yeah, it's very hard to come off naturally stupid. And Truth does that really, really well. From him, you know, assuming Heyman's in the Royal Rumble to realizing Brock is and, you know, I mean, I think I made a joke in the Raw report that it's very, very upsetting seeing how they treat a title with such prestige, just feeding him to Brock like he was nothing. After so many months of building this person up with his title, they just fed him to Brock in like 2 seconds, and it was really upsetting. But realistically, you know, I think that Truth got a pretty good deal. I mean, most people get F5 out of their shoes.
Let me ask you this. It won't happen, but do you think we could possibly see the Maven moment with Truth at the Rumble with Brock Lesnar? And what would your reaction
would
be if it did happen?
I would probably sit on the couch, smile, and nod my head slowly because I wouldn't be surprised. Brock's one of those guys where if you're a homie, then he'll do whatever, you know, on the show. I don't know if they know each other, but I would assume as much.
Well, Truth's been there just south of forever, so.
Yeah.
He left for a couple of years for Impact, but we don't need to talk about that. Also, how is it possible that Truth is 50-something years old?
Because black don't crack, homie.
That's the exact line I was anticipating in response to that. All right, we already discussed Lana and Rusev and Lashley and Liv. Rusev and the three L's, because it certainly feels like we're taking L's on this storyline sometimes, Tony.
Amen to that.
Viking Raiders and the Sings. You didn't even give it the honor of having the match caption in the Raw report.
Nope. Refused to.
The Viking Raiders say fuck them in 45 seconds. Not going to give it the mention here on the show either?
No.
Didn't think so. Becky and Asuka's contract signing here. We see Becky take the mist from Asuka, and while she's having the mist after effects cleaned out of her eyes, she proceeds to cut arguably one of Becky's better promos in a long time, saying that she needed something like this in order to bring that fight back out of her, and that while she may go down at the Royal Rumble, she's going down swinging and she's taking Asuka with her.
You know, like, Becky's always pretty solid, I think. I can't get behind the idea that that the higher-ups wouldn't want Becky to fight Asuka. Like, that doesn't – it came out of nowhere, first of all, and secondly, it doesn't go with everything that we've seen from the higher-ups, quote-unquote, and Becky Lynch, where they just didn't like her. So why would they keep somebody like Asuka away from her because of losing this, that, or whatever? It's just not a story that goes with the Becky Lynch character. And it feels like they shoehorned that in because they needed a reason outside of the fact that Becky just hasn't beaten Asuka, which I think is enough to make that match happen. So because of that, it kind of just – the match is just kind of there. And that's a shame because it shouldn't just kind of be there. But then you have to realize it's during Royal Rumble. And as I said before, this pay-per-view is a one match, you know. No one really talks about any other match during the Royal Rumble card. You tell me, Harry, what is your favorite non-Royal Rumble match on the Royal Rumble card ever? I can't list one. I'm pretty sure you could because you're that guy. But
well, I mean, I was there for it. So Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt from 2014 sticks out to me.
Okay, so you were there. But, yeah, I can't. I mean, of course, I can't remember a match from tonight's show, let alone any Royal Rumble. But the point stands, I think. You know, a mass majority of us fans watch the Royal Rumble specifically for that match. So these matches are unfortunately either filler or throwaway matches that don't really matter by comparison.
Rey Mysterio and Andrade in a ladder match for the U.S. title next week on Raw. I don't like it because I think that putting Andrade and Rey in a ladder match this close to the Rumble was a mistake. If anything, I would have been more okay with them doing the ladder match for the U.S. title at Mania in kind of Andrade's big make moment, but they're going to do it on Raw next week because apparently they need to pop a rating against with no college football or football of any kind to go up against.
I guess. I think that they just have a hard-on for these two guys facing each other. And if they're going to use the you know, Hispanic market and heritage to back it up, that's fine. I don't feel comfortable with Rey Mysterio wearing Louis Vuitton and being the representative for Latinos everywhere. Something there just doesn't ring true.
Would it be knockoff Louis Vuitton? Never mind. I'm an asshole.
Louis.
I've accepted it. Louis Vuitton. Eric Rowan gets bitten by whatever's in the cage. No one cares. More at 11:30.
No one cares except for the referee who put on gloves just in case. Beautiful.
He had to sell the hand, brother. Make it look good, kid. Seriously, can we just be done with Eric Rowan already? Jesus fucking Christ.
He's not bad. I said it months ago. There's nothing that they're going to reveal that's going to make this worth all the wait.
And clearly now that it's some kind of animal-ish thing, sort of. Fuck. That officially wraps up Raw, and that's kind of a down note to end on, because I actually thought it was a pretty good show. Let's get to our final reaction, shall we, Tony?
Yep.
Favorite match or moment from Raw or SmackDown?
Kevin Owens flipping on off the stage. What, someone called him Parkour Owens? Something around those lines. I don't know. It was great.
I'm going to go
nowhere,
with Alex,
man.
Buddy.
He said, I'm going to run up this bitch and flip it. That's what I'm going to do. And you're going to love it.
And love it, Tony did. I'm going with Alistair and Buddy 3. Those two can't have a bad match against each other. It's physically not possible, apparently.
Good call.
Least favorite match or moment of Raw or SmackDown? The Greg Watry Award.
Let's see. Actually, Raw wasn't all that bad. It had a dip in quality after the first hour, that's for sure. I'm just going to continue on with the anytime Lana speaks, it doesn't make any sense. It's really, really bad acting. It's just bad. It's not even bad because, oh, I'm trying to be bad. She's just not good at what she does.
I'm gonna go with the way that they shoot.
Something was up with her makeup today. I don't know what it was. I think I joked in the report she looked like Marv from Home Alone when he had an iron dropped on his face. I don't know what was going on with the makeup.
That is the most publicity Daniel Stern has gotten in years. I'm going to go with the Otis-Mandy storyline bleeding into Alexa and Mandy Rose. Women's Revolution? Nah, fuck that.
Do you think Otis has bigger breasts than Mandy and Alexa put together?
Definitely bigger than Alexa's. Mandy's are pretty decent size, so not put together, but I'd assume it's probably a pretty close call between Otis and Mandy.
Hmm.
He's got titties. Scores for both Raw and SmackDown, Tony.
SmackDown, I'm going to go ahead and give a 7. That's my go-to number because I feel that SmackDown is a perfectly adequate show on most weeks. Raw, I'm going to give a 7.5, which is a very, very good rating for Raw because I think the curve stops at about 8. This was one of those shows where even though not everything was for me, there was some good quality stuff that I enjoyed. And, you know, not every Raw is made for us. I think very few Raws are made for us, actually. But no, I just had really little to complain about. And the complaints that I did have were minimal enough to, like, you know, be looked over or glossed over. Commentary,
I gave
man.
SmackDown a 6. I gave SmackDown a 6 because I thought that SmackDown was actually a lesser episode than we usually get from the Blue Brand. I thought Raw really stepped up tonight. I thought Raw was clearly the superior show between the two, and I gave Raw a 7.5 as well. I thought that with Lashley and Rusev having a really good match into the finish, with Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy having a fantastic match, and then the main event delivering what it was supposed to be, which is nonstop action despite how short it was, that there wasn't really a whole lot to complain about on tonight's brand. You can definitely see the Heyman influence on the show, but at the same time, I think it's also the fact that the people on the show are a lot more motivated now that they're getting opportunities to shine that maybe they previously weren't getting.
Yeah. I mean, look, Buddy Murphy was at the, you know, main event segment of the show, and he's going to be aligned with Seth Rollins, who is supposed to be the face of Raw.
Well, technically he would be the heel, but never mind. Again, Jerry Lawler joke. I know. I know. I'll show myself out now. Hey, Tony, where can everybody find you online?
Mostly 411mania.com. I do the Raw Report on a weekly basis. That's pretty much it for now.
Occasionally, you'll show up on thechairshot.com and do articles.
Yeah.
Is TonyAcero.com still under construction?
Yeah, I'm revamping it pretty soon. I want it to coincide with the book release, so that'll be all worked on within the next couple of months.
You have to keep us updated as well as letting people know. And if you're interested in any of Tony's previous work, I'm pretty sure they can find that on Amazon, right?
Yep.
Make sure you guys check that out. You can find me online at thechairshot.com. I'm hoping to bring back the Progress Wrestling Review soon. I'm getting a new computer for my birthday, so it should give me an opportunity to have more chances to do some typing and stuff because of the instability of my other computer at this point. But in addition to that, you can find me over on the Fantasy Wrestling League, where I've now taken over as one of the co-admins for the Fantasy Wrestling League. I did the points for tonight's episode of Raw over there as well. And in the comment section over on 411mania.com/wrestling as well. So that's where you can find us. At Tony Acero on Twitter.
Tony Acero 411.
At Tony Acero 411 on Twitter for him, at HEB the Eagle for me, at The Chair Shot for the entire brand. This has been The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. He's Tony Acero. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week with the Go Home. for the Royal Rumble. Tony, hit your line.
Deuces, bitches.
And since I didn't play it at the start of the show, we go out with Across the Nation.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation, I'll take the fall. The saints, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the fake, the fraud, the messer with me.
You have been listening to The Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Liz Puglisi bring you the go-home episode of the show heading towards the Royal Rumble 2020 here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.